Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday, Rule Breakers. It is another amazing episode of your favorite show, No Rules, Just Mics. We are the No Rules Radio Show, bringing you the latest and sometimes controversial topics that you want to know. We have Chris Burson that is off tonight, although I hear he might be calling in when he has a free minute. We're not too sure what's going on with him. But alongside of me, I have the Holy City Sinner himself, Christian. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic, Topher. Glad to be here. Apparently I'm the only one who can get it together and be here these last 2 weeks. I mean, you were missing last week, bursting this week. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, you know what? You can shut the hell up with that. That makes I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding. It was actually bursting 2 weeks in a row. I know. It hasn't been you. It's bursting gone the last 2 weeks, but he's a busy man. I mean, last week we know we had some business to tend to, but I'm not so sure what he's up to this week. He was kind of being vague with me. Did you get any information out of him?
Okay, so after talking to him extensively, he's being kind of vague, kind of, like, mysterious, not too sure what's going on. So I've come up with a couple of reasons why this person is not here. Number one, he's having a baby. Number two,
Hey.
He has the Alabama shakes.
He might have the Alabama shakes.
It's hitting people. Number three, he realized that he was, in fact, Wonder Woman and had to spin into action and save the day. I'm not too sure what needs to be saved. I don't know how he would do with Wonder Woman's golden lasso, but, you know, we'll see. The next one, I thought that he was abducted by Justin Bieber fans, and they dressed him up as the Biebs.
Could he be abducted by Justin Bieber fans if he himself is a Bieber fan?
You know what? I didn't think of that. Oh, that completely has an entire different spin on. Maybe he is
a believer.
Bieber.
He's a believer, and I think he heads a fan club chapter in Illinois. So maybe he had another prior engagement with his believer crew.
He might have. He might have. Gloria Estefan's Rhythm might have finally got him. You know, she says the Rhythm's going to get
you. It will get you.
It finally got him.
The Rhythm will get you.
Mm-hmm. He could be the new member of TLC, though. You know, Left Eye left, and by left I mean
true.
She passed away. So he could be the new Left Eye. But I think what actually happened, and you know, we're really sorry to tell everybody this. Chris Burson's a very good friend of ours, and we love him very much. But I honestly think that he was hit by Miley Cyrus's wrecking ball. I think that just kind of put the end to Chris Burson. So we'll see next week if he shows up. I don't know.
When Miley comes in like a wrecking ball, man, it's tough to stop her.
That's right. Duck and grab that ointment that your doctor gave you about 3 years ago. Don't pretend like you don't know. Yeah, we know. Just grab the ointment. Miley Cyrus is a little bit, never mind. So anyway, how are you doing, Christian?
I'm doing fantastic. Glad to be back here with everybody here on No Rules, Just Mics. Week went by quickly. I mean, for me anyway, it just seems like just yesterday we were here. We had a great show with Ryan Lill. I'm sure we'll do a little recap of that and let you know how you can listen if you missed it. But, yeah, it was a really good show last week. It was fun having him on to talk about his life, his early career here. And hopefully we'll be hearing from big things from him in the future. But, yeah, I'm excited to be back and do another show.
Yeah, me too. And it was a great episode. If you guys missed it, you guys can always catch us via our podcast on iTunes. You just type in No Rules, Just Mics on the podcast, and you can download last week's episodes and some of the subsequent episodes or the episodes prior to that. And you can always go to our website, which is myuncensoredradio.com. We're always up there. You can catch No Rules, Just Mics. You can catch The Guilty Pleasures. You can catch Lips on the Air, The Jake Headlam Show. We all have our own little designated area, so you can kind of listen to our greatest hits from the last couple of years that we've been on the air, and for us it's been a year, and kind of find out who's coming up next, what next guest stars that we have, including they had Ricky Lake on the show earlier this week.
Yeah, I saw.
I was shocked.
That's a good guess for those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently it was a great show. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm very excited to hear it. And I think we're actually going to be doing a replay of that show this evening after No Rules, Just Mics. But before that, Holy City Center, tell me what's going on this weekend.
All right. Well, as usual, Charleston is the place to be here in the South and across the country, of course. Always got some great stuff going on. Tomorrow, a couple of cool events. There's a Smoke on the Harbor barbecue throwdown, they're calling it. That's going to be a Friday-Saturday event. Pretty inexpensive. I think it's $10, but you get $5 knocked off if you bring, like, a canned good or non-perishable food item from the Low Country Food Bank. And you get to go and try some barbecue. It's actually, like, a competition as well, where some people will move on to, like, a national competition, I guess. So it's going to be, like, the state championship, basically, for barbecue. They're going to do wings and ribs and brisket, and the list goes on and on. You can see that whole list on holycitycenter.com. There's also the interesting what's called Bar Camp Charleston. It's a bunch of creatives, people who are have their own businesses, trying to do their own thing, you know, that are here, small businesses, what have you. They have a conference where there really is no lineup. Everybody just kind of comes and hangs out, and they just talk throughout the day about different parts of businesses, and people just kind of do what they want to do. And I was actually given a ticket, well, two tickets away for that on the website. That just ended 3 hours ago, but people did have the chance for tickets for that, so that was exciting. I try to do giveaways here and there, so stay posted. Also, tomorrow night, America's Got Talent will be in town. Some of the folks who are on the show, if you did watch it, their show is rolling through and will be tomorrow night at the Charleston Performing Arts Center. As for the rest of the weekend, there's a couple of 5Ks, of course, like the Project Mud 5K out in the tea plantation. There's also a whole bunch of drinking events, as there always is. The Alley is offering up dollar PBRs to celebrate the unveiling of a PBR mural that they have. They've been working on it. They had an artist come in and make a mural for a new section of their building. And there'll be PBR discounts and pretty much all day. There's also the Sippin' Saturdays out in the Urban House Vineyards. Get your get some tastings going with wine and Firefly Vodka, the sweet tea vodka we're famous for here. Another great event is going to be at Park Circle, where they're going to have what they're calling a rockabilly-cue, which is rockabilly music, barbecue food, classic car show, pinup girl competition, they're calling one event. Just all sorts of craziness at Park Circle. That starts 1 p.m. and is going to go all night, as a lot of the businesses are going to have bands playing and things like that. And finally, certainly there's a ton more going on, but the last one I'm going to highlight is the Jailbreak. It's a festival that is thrown periodically, usually once to twice a year, at the Old City Jail, which is said to be haunted, of course. But on the grounds and actually inside the building, there's all sorts of artists, dancers, comedians, musicians just showcasing their various talents. There's usually vendors, food, drinks. I went to one a few months back, my first one. It was awesome, had a blast. Just seeing all the different types of artwork and stuff and being able to walk through the Old City Jail is always an interesting experience as well. So I definitely recommend that. Pretty much everything I mentioned has tickets still available, or they're free events. You just have to pay for, you know, drinks and food when you're there. So it's not like you're going to miss out on these. Go to holycitycenter.com/events, or just go to the main page and work your way there. All sorts of stuff going on this weekend and on and on and on until early next year. I've got tons of stuff up there. So get out there and have fun. And if you're not from Charleston, that's okay. I'm sure your town's got some good stuff going on. Just enjoy your weekend however you see fit. Topher, are you going to be hitting up any events this weekend, or are you just relaxing?
I honestly think I'm just going to kind of keep it low-key this weekend. It's a friend of mine's birthday on Saturday, so I think I might do that. What about you?
I'm not too sure yet. I'm actually on call for the job, so it could be one of those things where I end up doing a lot of fun stuff, or I'm called in and I'm not able to do anything. I'm hoping to hit up a couple of things on Saturday. Some of those parties I mentioned where there's no admission, the cheap PBR at the alley sounds like a pretty awesome idea.
I might join you for
but
that,
sadly,
if you're interested.
Yeah, if I'm going, I will definitely let you know. Good people at the alley, too. I know both the owners. I've worked with them on, you know, some of their events as far as promotion and things. Good guys. Have a really cool venue. But, yeah, I'll certainly let you know. I wanted to go to Jailbreak, but girlfriend's schedule came out, was not able to make it work, and just, you know, it was going to save me some money anyway, so I decided not to do that. But if you do have extra money, anybody listening, you know, definitely go out there and do that. It's a lot of fun. But, yeah, I'll let you know for sure. But everything's up in the air at this point. You know how it is when you have a job where you could get called in at any moment. You got to kind of stay low-key sometimes.
I agree, and that's why I gave up those kind of jobs.
Yeah, right? Well, thankfully,
so
I'm not on call that much.
That's true.
Savannah
was
great.
Savannah.
Great, great. For those who didn't listen, I'll keep it brief, but my girlfriend had been training for her first ever half marathon. So we went to Savannah on a Friday night. We didn't really do too much. Like, we went out to eat at this place that was literally called The Diner. That was its name. You know, typical little diner, but it was kind of a neat thing if you're in Savannah. You know, it's a cool little place, pretty inexpensive. But spent that night pretty much just relaxing because we had to get up at the ungodly hour of 3:30 in the morning to get ready and then head to downtown Savannah where this marathon was called the Rock and Roll Marathon. It's actually a series that they do. They travel city to city. Like, I think they're in Las Vegas this week. And they're going to eventually go overseas as well. But, yeah, if you Google Rock and Roll Marathon, you'll find if they're going to be in a city near you. But it's a cool event because they have bands set up all along the course. So there's, like, live music playing for whether you're just there to watch like I was or if you're running. People sit outside their homes and, like, high-five runners and people are handing out water and energy drinks and all that. And music is playing at the start and the finish line, you know, like hit music, you know, radio-type music, and then there's a big party afterwards. So that whole atmosphere was really cool, much more entertaining than a typical, you know, marathon-type event. And my girlfriend finished it without walking at any point.
Nice.
Did really well. It was her first one. Her dad ran it with her, which was great, so she had somebody with her, since I clearly was not going to be able to run. But she did well, you know, pretty, you know, decent time. She knows she can do better, but she just wanted to complete it, and that's what she did. And she did it in a pretty good time, and who knows, she might go back out there and try to do it again and just keep getting better times, but I think she's satisfied for now. She was able to do it. But Savannah, beautiful town. If you are in the area ever, I definitely recommend it. Similar to Charleston, it's got some waterfront dining and bars, and it's got historic places. It has a, you know, its own brewery and all sorts of good restaurants and things. So we were able to do a little bit of bar hopping after her race that night, you know, so I got to see a cool places. But, yeah, definitely check out Savannah if you have a chance. Very cool little sleepy southern town for sure.
Not better than Charleston, though.
No, for sure. Sure not better than Charleston. If you haven't been to either, come to Charleston for sure. But Savannah's not bad. Nice little town.
I remember I was reading this article earlier this week, and it was a Huffington Post article, and it was basically saying kind of like advice to your younger self. And, you know, I know that Chelsea's been training and stuff like that for the run, and she's probably been wanting to run a marathon because I know her dad does it a lot. What kind of advice would you give yourself, Christian, to your, let's say your 16-year-old self? What kind of advice would you give him? Now that you're an adult, now that you're in your 30s,
oh boy.
What would you tell your 16-year-old self? No,
that's
you're
30.
It's okay.
I am 30 years old, sir. I don't know if I'm in my 30s. Yeah, let's wait a little bit. No. Oh, boy, what would I tell my, you know, even for things that I'm ashamed about or bummed out about, you know, they did lead me to where I am. And, you know, that's where I'm supposed to be, I feel. And I try not to look back on things too much. You know, I don't know anything super specific I could tell myself, because you never know. You think you could be giving yourself advice that could completely alter everything and could really make it even worse. You just don't know. But without getting too crazy into down the wormhole of the, you know, multiple dimensions of yourself, you know, I would probably tell myself to, there are some times to get a little bit more serious when it came to college. My last few years, you know, spent a lot of time, you know, partying and hanging out with friends and didn't put in much of an effort to prepare myself for life after college. You know, again, it's led me to where I am today. And maybe I wouldn't have ended up in Charleston, which I love. I wouldn't have met my girlfriend, possibly, you know, who knows. But, you know, that was something that, looking back, you know, I could have set myself up better for, if not, you know, success in the field that I wanted, maybe more immediate success, a little bit more stability. But, you know, when other people were doing internships and things like that, I was more interested in goofing off and, you know, having a good time. So that's something I'd probably tell myself is just, you know, try to realize that you're not going to be a kid forever. You can still have fun like a kid, because I certainly am. But there is a time and a place to kind of, you know, do. It might be boring. It might seem like it's silly at the time, but buckle down a little bit and try to set yourself up for some opportunities later in life. You know, that's probably what I would tell my 16-year-old self.
Hmm. You know, I find it interesting. I asked a couple of different people the same question, and they say, oh, I would tell myself, you were the first person that said, you know, if it wasn't for my actions, I don't think I'd be where I am. And I think that really kind of changes my perspective in kind of how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy with where I am in life. I'm very happy with what I've achieved. But I really think that, you know, it really just kind of puts a huge different spin on things. I'm sorry, I'm never, ever without words. I always have something to say, but this is really interesting. You can always tell yourself, don't worry about this, or forget this guy, or just be happy with who you are now, and just be yourself now, and don't worry about what anybody else thinks, because it's not going to matter later, or, you know, whatever the case is.
Sure.
If you don't do everything that you've done in life, I don't think you really get to where you are today. I think everything changes. I think it's that whole butterfly effect. You
Absolutely.
Know what I mean?
Now, there's some people that believe in fate. Some believe it completely, that you wouldn't be able to change anything at all. Others believe you could, like you said, the butterfly effect, where you could change something and it throws everything off. But some people believe certain parts of fate where a certain thing is going to happen no matter how you live your life, whatever that may be. This thing is always going to happen at this time. So it's hard, you know, since you don't really know. But think about it. If there was some advice you would give yourself as a kid, maybe it's, hey, ignore this kid, he's a jerk, you know, don't give him time of day, like you think you want to be his friend, but you don't need to be. That event may have shaped you to, and you might not even realize it, to take a certain route in your life that you wouldn't want change. So, yeah, something may have sucked, or you may have made a poor decision, but that
right.
led you to something awesome. Like maybe some decision you made led you to meeting Matt. And if you take out that bad thing that led you to him, you might not have met him. You know, so it's hard. And I try to think that way. Maybe it's just me trying to feel better about opportunities missed or things I goofed off when I shouldn't have. But I don't know. Obviously, I really do believe in the butterfly effect, that the littlest thing can change everything.
I agree. I think if I saw my 16-year-old self, one, I would say, yeah, you're still good looking today. And number two, I would tell my 16-year-old self I would tell my 16-year-old self it's okay. It's going to be okay.
Yeah,
because
I
remember,
like that,
I remember at 16, I was terrified. I don't know if I'd want to change anything. I think knowing myself, I think I'd be able to give kind of like a vague, just a vague statement. It's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And I think that's just kind of like that fortune cookie message that you get that really just kind of helps you push forward. And I think I'd be a happier person a lot longer. I think my whole teenage years, I probably would have gotten back. But I think, you know, again, I think everything would have changed after that. And I don't think I would be, I'd like to think I'd be where I am today, but I don't know. If I was a happier emo in high school or in, you know, and I was hanging out with, you know, the great friends, and I don't know where I would be. I honestly don't know where I would be.
it could pretty much go the same route, but like you said, say something changed and you had more confidence in yourself. Maybe wouldn't that more confidence, you, there's some guy that you found attractive at a bar, at your school, whatever it is that you've met somewhere, and that little extra bit of confidence that maybe you didn't have might have taken you down a completely different path. Maybe, you know, you would have started a relationship with someone else, and who knows how that would have affected from there on out. You know, you could have dated someone else for a while, it ended, but you might have missed out on meeting, you know, your current husband, you know. And then there's some people who believe that no matter what decisions you make, you would have found him eventually. I don't know which I subscribe to with that. I don't know when it comes to marriage and all that, if, it, you know, there's that one person and you're going to find them no matter what. But, yeah, it's weird. You could, you think you're doing something good for your past self, but who knows how much that would change your trajectory, if I could talk. It's an interesting conversation. I think it's one of those things when you've had a couple of beers or you're smoking up or something that you could talk about for, like, hours. Like, hey, man, but what if you time traveled, man? And you could just go on and on with, like, weird conversation like that.
Okay, one, I'm not high.
No, I know you're not. I think our conversation shows that. But I'm saying it seems like it's one of those conversations that could go on and on forever.
Oh, yeah.
Especially
in
an altered state of mind. You know, a lot of people, what I didn't hear is people say, I would tell my 16-year-old self the lottery numbers for this day.
It's a great idea.
The
day you turn 18 or the day you turn 21, that these are the lotto numbers for that day. I didn't
but
hear
you know
any
what?
Of that. But I would probably tell myself Matthew's address in South Carolina. Go there and just wait. He's there.
And, you know, again, who knows? Maybe meeting him earlier wouldn't have worked. But if you knew that meeting him earlier just meant X amount of more days, months, or years of happiness, then, yeah, if you knew that was the case, you would definitely tell young you. And as for the lottery, yeah, it's a great one. I don't know why I didn't think about that. However, I would probably not tell 16-year-old me lottery numbers until, you know, pretty far down the line. I don't think 18, 19, 20-year-old me would have made the best decisions with a shitload of money. I think I would wait and be like, hey, when you turn 28 or when you turn 29, 30, these are the lottery numbers. Just make it through life until then and still be the person that you have become. Because, yeah, I hate to say it, but you know how, like, you see these teen stars and stuff who get all warped because they get money? I shudder to think if I somehow came into that much money sometime between my 18th and, like, 25th birthday, I don't think I would turn out so good. So as much as we mock some of these guys, you know, I can't say I wouldn't have turned out like some of them for sure.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that. I think that's very insightful. Because I probably would have blown it all. I probably would have been addicted to some kind of drug.
Exactly.
You know, when you're that young, you don't know how to handle that. You don't know how to handle that kind of responsibility.
Exactly.
You don't know how to handle that pressure. I'd like to think that, you know, oh, I have a good head on my shoulders. I'm going to do great with it. I'm going to invest it. I'm going to save it up. I'm going to buy a house and a car and, you know, whatever. But I'm at the age of 18, you're just kind of like just dishing it away like it's the next card.
Right. Exactly.
So, I don't know.
You probably did, and you probably did have a good head on your shoulders, and I probably did too at a young age. But that's because you didn't have that much money. You did have to work hard for things, and then everything wasn't given to you. So you appreciate those things more than someone who's had money for their whole life or gets money, you know, randomly without having to work hard for it, especially at a younger age. So sometimes living, you know, life as a normal person, you know, just preps you better than someone who's rich from day one.
Yeah, I agree. If you work hard for your money, it's going to treat you... Oh, my God. That's such an awful 80s song. I'm sorry, everybody.
Work hard for your money. Yeah.
Okay, that's all you. That's all you.
What are you talking? That was Burson. Burson called in. That was him.
Burson did not call in.
Yeah, he's on the line. I unmuted him. I heard him singing, so I unmuted him and let him on the air.
Oh, okay. So maybe he's going to be one of those contestants on The X Factor. He's rehearsing for the, not The X Factor, what is it, America's Got Talent?
Is that his coming to Charleston? Yeah, tomorrow. Yep.
Okay, so he's just rehearsing. Need to be a little bit more in key, Chris Burson. I'm sorry.
You have to work a little harder, bud.
Sure, that's right. Anyway, you know, which I want to talk just real quick. It was, you know, we're talking about what would you tell our 16-year-old selves about, you know, about life and about how to kind of live your life and words of wisdom and things like that. There is this article in, you guys know I fucking love the Huffington Post, by the way. There is this bisexual Georgia teenager that was kicked out by his parents because he came out as bisexual. And he was getting, like, really, really awesome, like, he was getting amazing support from hundreds of strangers. They rally around this penniless 18-year-old to offer their support, and they managed to raise a bunch of thousands of dollars for this kid to kind of help him get on his feet. That's, number one, in Georgia, that's huge. That's huge. And number two, it's just, it's amazing how, you know, how you kind of forget with all the bad stuff in the news that there are still good people out there. And the fact that, you know, here's this homeless 18-year-old kid, you know, who got so much money from, I think it was like a GoFundMe page or something like that, that people just donated to him thousands and thousands of dollars so he can get on his feet. I mean, what are your thoughts, Christian?
Well, it's an interesting story because we were going to talk about this last week, and then things kind of, you know, with Ryan Lill, the great interview went longer than we thought, which was great.
Right.
And, you know, cause you never know how people are going to be when you interview them, and thankfully it went well. But a lot has changed since then. So, you know, from what you said, that was the original story, and some of the details, there was a GoFundMe page. It's kind of like a Kickstarter, but unlike Kickstarter where people get, like, prizes or, you know, swag or whatever for helping out a band or an artist or something, GoFundMe is usually, like, charitable, just you give money out of the kindness of your heart kind of thing. But 400 people donated more than $12,000 to this kid, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And no matter what happens with the other stuff I'm about to say, that's still an amazing thing, that a kid, when people thought a kid was kicked out of his house by his parents because of his sexual orientation, they rallied around and tried to help as best they could. You know, they could have given that money to anything, themselves, another charity, but they really felt this person needed their help. And I think that's amazing that strangers showed a kindness that his parents might not have. But why I say that is because there was an update to the story where, you know, it kind of went viral, this story, and I guess the kid's dad sent a message to the Huffington Post trying to explain what happened, and he was trying to say that him and his wife had known that the kid was gay for 3 to 4 years, and they never had a problem with that. And he tried to tie the issues that they had or some of the trouble he was having as far as drinking and driving. He'd gotten suspended at work for insulting his supervisor. He'd put his personal business all over social media, which could affect his future employment. And, you know, it was just typical, you know, teenage stuff that parents have problems with. And then he mentioned they never kicked him out, that he chose to leave, et cetera, et cetera. So he tried to explain it by saying it was a whole lot of other stuff going on at this story that the kid wasn't saying. The kid has since gotten an attorney who responded to that, saying that, you know, basically that the father's lying. It's a completely different reality than what actually happened. And, you know, it's becoming a back-and-forth thing. So where does the truth lie? Most likely somewhere in the middle, like it usually is with these circumstances. But like I said, even if it turns out this kid, you know, was just being a brat and his parents didn't kick him out and they have absolutely no problem with him being bisexual, it's still amazing to know that over 400 people, and it's probably been more than that since then, decided that they wanted to help this person out. You know, they didn't know him personally. You know, they couldn't, you know, help him out by, you know, driving him somewhere or getting him groceries or giving him a place to live. But they gave him some money to try to help him get his life together. And that's pretty amazing. Anytime people do that, whether someone's sick or going through a tough time with a family member. So it's always amazing when people do it. But especially, you know, and in our country, which is still divided in some states, including Georgia, where this child is from,
yeah, it's amazing that people went out of their way to try to help him out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for me, it's great that he got that people who didn't know him are rallying behind him and who are supporting him. But I have a huge issue. I don't care if he was posting that he was sleeping with three people, and you know, you don't ever throw your child out of your home.
No,
what
sure.
parent? What parent thinks? I don't understand the mindset of this is my child and I love him and he's great and I'll always stand by him. Why are you going to throw your kid out of the house? Because you didn't follow your rules, because he wasn't doing what you wanted him to do. If you were okay with the fact that he was bisexual or gay or whatever you thought he was or for whoever he is, there's no reason for you to throw your child out on the street, especially at 18 years old. You know, you took his car away from him. It's unacceptable. I don't understand how parents can do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. You hear stories sometimes about kids that are just wildly out of control, and the parents are beyond help. And I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but you do hear stories where you almost kind of like, yeah, they really didn't have a choice. You know, there are some times where parents, I feel like it's possible, but it's got to be really, really bad for a parent to just essentially give up on their child. I mean, really bad, you know, like to the point where the child maybe is threatening the parents' lives or has a really bad drug problem and needs help by going to rehab, and if the kid refuses, what can you do? You know, I've heard stories like that on, you know, on TV, you know, what's that show, Intervention and things. But,
right.
Yeah, in this situation, even if they didn't kick him out, like you said, for being bisexual, if it's just for the other things he mentioned, which is posting his, quote, business on Facebook, I mean, yeah, as a parent, you can guide your kid and say, hey, I don't think this is a good idea to be talking about you. I don't even know what the kid said, but, you know, talking about how you hooked up with somebody, you don't want that on social media. Your future employers can find out about that, you know, and that's going to look badly on you. But you kick your child out for that kind of stuff, yeah, I agree with you. I'm not a parent, but I'm sure most parents are going to be on our side saying, yeah, I could never kick out my child for such a small kind of offense. Punish them, sure, but actually let them out, like kick them out of the home, let them go on their own. Yeah, I don't see how you can do that unless it's just really bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that I don't understand. You know, it's 2013. It's almost 2014. You'd think that there would be more acceptance in the world. You know, we're up to 17 states that have approved marriage equality. Thank you very much, Hawaii, by the way. And it's pronounced Hawaii, not Hawaii. I don't know. I was told to pronounce it Hawaii. Anyway, it racks my brain because I think that really just kind of sets in motion a downward spiral for anybody. Whether you're gay or straight, whether you had a teen pregnancy or what have you, if you throw your child out of the house, that basically says that you don't love them anymore. The foundation, the backbone of who they are and who they're going to be has completely abandoned them. So what do they have to make the right decision? They have a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old mindset. They don't know any better. So it's going to set off a chain of really, really bad events, and then you're going to say, well, where did I go wrong? You went wrong by throwing your child out of the damn house. So think before you act. You may be pissed off. You may be mad. You may not agree with the lifestyle. You may not agree with the decision that they've made, but that is still your child, and it is still your job to nurture and care for your child and support them and understand that if this is an unconditional love with your child, which it should be, then you should be able to stand behind them no matter what. Sorry.
I agree with you.
You're 100% right. I mean, again, neither of us are parents, but I don't think any parents would necessarily agree with us except for some really egregious situations. But even those, I feel, are few and far between. But, yeah, for little things, And then especially, you know, the orientation, sexual orientation of your child. Yeah, you would think in this day and age things have changed, but they haven't for some people.
Right.
But I think for the most part, most parents react well enough. I don't want to say they all react well. You know, not parents aren't kicking out children when they do come out before they're 18, you know, before they're already out of the house. Some don't agree with it, but, you know, they're better than it was, and it gets better every day, it seems. And like you said, Hawaii just passed gay marriage legislation. What is it, 17 states now? So it's slowly but surely getting there, and as acceptance becomes more widespread, these types of stories will be fewer and far between.
Agreed. Oh, I think we have Chris Burston on the phone. Chris?
Oh, look who it is.
Hello. Is he here? Well, I thought he was.
Maybe not. Well, I did have breaking news from Chris Burston.
Oh, I like breaking news.
He was listening in for parts of the show while he was busy at what he claims is work. We're still not convinced of that. But he said while he was listening to us in his ear, you know, through his headset or what have you, he was having a customer at his job screaming at him while he was listening to us. So hopefully he heard us say something funny and he kind of chuckled at the customer, which then made the customer even more pissed. But that's dedication right there. Not dedication to his job, apparently, because he's listening to the radio at work. But dedication to the show. That's how much he cares about you people listening. He wanted to make sure he was still up to date and listening in as he's getting yelled at.
Well,
and also,
we appreciate
thank you
listening.
Oh, yeah, of course. And we appreciate the people in the chat room. Jennifer, it's great to see, as always. Shirley, I don't recognize, but happy to have you here. And she let us know. I said 17 states. It's actually 16 and the District of Columbia. So that's what the total of 17 is, because it's 16 states and Washington, D.C. So thank you for that correction. Yes, Shirley, part of AMC Press. How could I forget? With our man Toku, who is not joining us tonight, but usually does some work for us. Their show's on at 11 Eastern, if I'm not mistaken.
He does some work for us?
Yeah.
You make him sound like
he's
a carpenter.
He's my personal assistant. No, Toku is usually our screener slash a co-host of sorts. Although he's not listed in the official title, he has done a lot for us, and we appreciate the work, and he's always there to give us his take on things. But he has his own show with the AMC Press crew, 11 p.m. Eastern, so be sure to check for them. We'll give them a little plug.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought Chris Burston was on the other line. I'm pretty sure he had something very important to say. However.
Well, if he's listening, he can butt in at any point, because I think I've got something pretty interesting to talk about. For those of you listening, it's interesting to me, but you would think it's 2013. The world of medicine is pretty far advanced. I know we still have ways to go with a lot of diseases, but to think how far we've come just over the years is pretty incredible. The types of things that used to be a death sentence for people that are no longer. Eradicated diseases, you know, ones that used to be rampant that don't even exist anymore or are, you know, minute and can be dealt with quite easily with medication. You would just think with all the sciences in medicine that there really isn't too much to discover as far as the human body is concerned. As far as parts, I should be a little bit more specific. There's still plenty that could be studied. But, I mean, come on, we've got to know every bone in the human body. We've got to know every muscle, every ligament. There shouldn't be any surprises there. With the amount of studies, autopsies, experiments, just everything throughout time, right, Topher? I mean, there couldn't be any new parts. Well, apparently that is incorrect. according to an article in it's part of Time magazine, and you can Google it. It's in a bunch of other places. But there are some surgeons from Belgium, that's right, from Belgium, a university there. They were doing some work on a knee, and they came across something that could actually revolutionize how they treat ACL injuries. These two doctors have found that
basically how they came across this discovery. For the last 4 years, they've been trying to solve a mystery where patients who have had their ACL repaired, you know, would still experience what are called pivot shifts in their knee, where the joint kind of like gives way during physical activity. While they were doing that, they discovered a completely new ligament that has never been discovered before. And this isn't like some weird thing that like one patient had, you know, some kind of evolutionary trait or something, you know, some kind of, what's the word I'm looking for, like mutation. It is something that every human has. It's just, for whatever reason, took this long to find. They named it the anterolateral ligament, or ALL, to join the likes of ACL, MCL, PCL, et cetera. And they just discovered this article is a couple of weeks old now. But, you know, the article came out on November 6th. This was discovered in the year 2013, a completely new ligament in the knee that we had no idea existed. To me, that is fascinating. I don't know about you, Topher, or the listeners, but to think of all the studies in medicine and everything that we've done, how could there possibly be a ligament, especially in the knee, where so many knee injuries every year? How did they not know about it? It's just amazing. And it's actually, the ligament is in 97% human. So again, pretty much everybody has this. It's crazy.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it is pretty impressive because I know as far as like sports injuries and stuff like that, the ACL is probably one of the most popular ones. And you'd think that over I don't know, let's be conservative and say over the last 50 years that somebody would have found this ligament out. And apparently it's very helpful and it helps pivot and it shifts the stem from an injury where, you know, before it you know, people didn't know that it was there. So when you had ACL surgery, my guess is they just kind of removed this, the ALL as well. It leads back to if we can find this ligament in probably one of the most common sports medicine surgeries ever, you know, where are we with, you know, it's only a matter of time before we find a cure for HIV, AIDS, or cancer, or maybe find the cure or find that one genetic mutation for autism. I have a nephew that I love very, very much who is autistic. He's such a great little kid, and I wouldn't change him for the world. But, you know, autism is not as uncommon as it once was. I think it's like, I don't remember the statistics. It's like one in 137 births result in the child being in some form or fashion autistic. It might have, you know, mild autism, or it might be, you know, some of the extreme cases. But watching my nephew kind of go through the change of being nonverbal to actually, you know, he's talking and he doesn't shy away like a lot of autistic kids do. It just goes to show that medicine is still moving forward and life is still moving forward. I think it's really, really bad that I'm going to quote a Jurassic Park quote, but we're going to get there in just a minute. But Jeff Goldblum was saying to the point of how all the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park were all female, and he says, you don't think that's going to stop them? And B.B. Wong, who I was surprised that was in the movie, said, and I quote, he was like, are you saying that females are going to reproduce? And Jeff Goldblum says, well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that nature will find a way. And I totally believe that. I totally believe that nature is going to find a way to survive. We've done it for billions of years. I mean, look at where, you know, where we've initially come from, and look at how we've evolved, and look at how we've survived as a people. Because I think we're probably one of the newest breeds of the evolution. I think computers are kind of right behind it, and I put computers in that because it's taking on a life of its own. Computers used to be like a Mac dot system where you'd have to type in the command key, and it's really, I mean, look what we're doing. We're broadcasting live over the internet. I mean, it's created a life of its own. So I really think that life will find a way, and hopefully now that we're able to determine whether or not we have you know, we have new parts of our body that are being discovered, maybe we can start finding ways to cure some of the ailments that are taking some of the lives of our loved ones. That was a long sentence.
Yeah,
sorry.
No, you're good. And we talked about it's been a while now, but I remember when there was the news came out that they might have discovered the cure for AIDS, or at least the HIV. So not necessarily, depending on how far along someone was. I forget all the details, but they had some success in a child that was born HIV positive, and they were able to cure the child. So, you know, it is amazing that things like that happen. Something like that doesn't blow my mind because those are things that you hope for and you believe could be possible. This, I just felt, was a little bit more interesting just for the sheer fact that, you know, unless it's something super microscopic that was just impossible for us to see in the past, it's just crazy to think that these scientists didn't really do anything out of the ordinary to discover a body part, a ligament, that just we didn't know existed for, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. It was crazy. I think it's a neat story, but like you said, it leads you to think about other stuff, you know. Just because something hasn't been discovered now doesn't mean it won't. Even though it seems like we've kind of been at a standstill with a lot of diseases, like cancer, for sure we treat better than we used to, but there is no cure. You sometimes forget that it's still possible. You just never know what's going to be discovered. Something new happens every day that changes how we think or, how we do things medically or et cetera. So, just an interesting story, and it opens it up to all sorts of cool things that you can think about that could change for sure. But I found it interesting. Hopefully you, those listening, think it's pretty neat too.
No, it really is. It kind of follows up. I remember in June they found, because you guys know I work, my day-to-day job is in the eye business. But in June, scientists discovered a new layer of the cornea, which is kind of like the clear window of your eye. It's where you put your contact lens on. It's like a clear sheath in front of the colored part of your eye. And normally there's five layers. There's the epithelial. There's the Basinger's membrane. There's the stroma, there's the Descemet membrane, and then there's the endothelial. It's supposed to be five layers. Well, they found the person who found it was called, his name is Harminder Dua, and he created the Dua's layer, which is, it's like in between a lot of these layers, and it wouldn't have been found had he have not done his research. So, yeah, I agree. Technology is amazing, and the ability for modern medicine to find these new different parts of the body, I think it's pretty impressive.
You know, going from finding a new ligament and solving diseases, or curing diseases, I should say, and solving mysteries of the body and the mind, let's go to somewhere where science and technology can do something that isn't quite as highbrow. Something else that came out that has to do with technology, yes, there is, believe it or not, a scientific and technological breakthrough. There is some new underwear that is said to filter out your farts. It's said to neutralize the stink of passing gas. Topher, you sent this article to me. Oh, technology, what a wonderful thing. Tell us all about this wonderful advancement for the human race.
Okay. So I'm very, very sorry about that really ridiculous segue, by the way. But
it
works,
technological advancements.
No, it does. apparently, there is a British line of fart filtering underwear that's doing big business in the United States, is pretty much kind of picking up on that. So, according to the Huffington Post, it says since worried about the odor neutralizing sheddies, which is what they're called, passed through the internet a few days ago, companies experienced over 400% increase in orders all over what's called the Beth Clark, which was estimated. So apparently a lot of people, and you know, they look like regular underwear, just with like a really, really large pad in the back, and it's supposed to actually filter the I can't believe we'll have to talk to you about this. It's supposed to filter the aroma that you have. But they're like really expensive underwear. Like men's boxer briefs cost between $39 to $45, while women's panties are about $31 to $34. I can go to American Eagle and I can get two pair for $20. So I'm just going to stick with that because I don't feel like my flatulence is that bad.
And
but
apparently,
it's called
for those
the
of you,
D flatulence deodorizer. It's on the market. You
no, that's a
Google
different
it.
Product. That's a different one.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, Shreddies are the actual underwear. But, yeah, there's another one. It's like a charcoal cloth pad, it says, that when activated, it, you know, masks the stink of farts. It's amazing that someone worked on this. And you sent me the article, but I'd seen a quick clip. I think it was, like, on the Colbert Report or something like that. So that's probably another reason why they've seen their increase in orders by 400% over the last couple of weeks, because it kind of made its rounds on the Internet and showed up on TV. But, yeah, we're finding new ligaments and knees. We're making underwear that suppresses the smell of farts. Is there nothing that the human race can't do?
I love the quote in Huffington Post. It says, Beth Clark explained, in 2008, the company began to serve customers with digestive tract woes, but branched out. It's a product for everyone, everybody, because everyone farts.
True story.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you're right. I am not of
article.
The worry that anytime I fart, it's this bad that it necessitates me buying a somewhat bulky looking underwear. But hey, there are people who have issues, digestive issues and such. I could, you know, this is all beneficial for someone, but I don't foresee, knock on wood, myself having to buy fart filtering underwear anytime soon.
Yeah. Chris Burson, what about you? Do you need to buy fart filtering underwear?
Well, I like how I can just jump in on the most obscure topic ever, but I will say that the believers who were listening to Gloria Estefan, who let me off the wrecking ball, now are letting me talk. So,
finally,
I figured I put all that together, put all that segue into my fart filtering topic. But you know what? It's part of American culture that you can invent anything. And if you know what, if people are going to buy it, go for it.
I agree. I mean, hell, how many people bought a fucking Snuggie? I was wearing one earlier.
Yeah.
There's no shame in my game.
I have
like
two in my house.
See, there's no shame. And it's this probably, I'd say, 50 cents worth of cloth that you pay $14 for, but it's the best thing ever. It is, for me, it's like I sit out by my fire, and what do I have? I have my beer or my glass of wine or my cocktail, and I have my Snuggie on, because it makes me feel
And I'm guessing, you were wearing the Snuggie because you thought it was cold, and it was probably maybe 40 degrees outside. Is that correct?
Okay. You know what? You can shut your face, my friend. It is actually it's 55 degrees right now. It is cold. I do not have the AC and or heat in my house because I like the fact that my electric bill is under $100. I can wear some clothes.
No kidding.
I can toss on my Snuggie. I'm good.
We had a low of 8 degrees the other day. So just to put it in perspective.
No thank you.
Well, no wonder Chicago's rated as like the number one murder city in the country.
That's true.
People are fucking freezing. Yeah. That's right, I said that.
And now that it gets dark at, like, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, isn't it darker,
more time
the higher
for the
alpha
beta
is?
What's that?
Does it get darker faster the higher in altitude you get? Like, the further up in the country, does it get darker faster?
It's further east or west, but then the time zone changes. But I think it gets – the sunset around here is, like, 5:15, 5:20. So it gets
pretty
dark.
I think you're right, like – my family is pretty much in line where I live now. We're a little bit closer to the coast, but being up in New England, they seem to get a little bit darker a little bit earlier than we do down here. Not by much, but, you know, like 10, 20 minutes or something like that, they'll be, like, dark, and, you know, we're just starting to get there. I have noticed that before.
Weird.
Yeah.
So, you know, science, I know it.
Yeah, remember how I was talking earlier about Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Here we come full circle. Apparently, Hollywood is not going to let Jurassic Park die because they're coming out
All
with
right.
a new Jurassic Park movie called Jurassic World. And I don't know when it's supposed to be coming out. They really haven't said anything. But, of course, according to my favorite news website, HuffingtonPost.com, apparently it's the fourth film in the Jurassic Park franchise. And Chris Pratt, who I don't know, is going to...
Oh, he's in The Office. Or not The Office,
he's in
the
Office.
Parks and Rec. No, Parks and Rec, I'm sorry.
Oh.
He's the Amy Poehler show. And he's been in a couple other films. He was in Zero Dark Thirty. He was one of the...
I knew I knew his face.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the, whatever that is, Marines.
Yeah. So it's going to be him. He's good-looking, so it's good to have a good-looking main character. But he's going to join the cast of Bryce Dallas Howard, which is Ron Howard's daughter, Nick Robinson, who I don't know, and Ty Simpson, who I also don't know. Apparently they're not sure when it's going to come out, but I'm excited that it's actually going to happen. I don't know. I know that they won't let the dinosaurs die, and I'm kind of a big Jurassic Park fan. I like all three movies, regardless of how sucky the second one was, but I'm excited that they're going to come out with a third one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited, especially since it's not been, you know, overkill on that franchise. They put out those three, and that was kind of it, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't like year after year or a two-year break and another one. I think enough time has passed where, you know, you'll have a brand new set of fans that are going to be excited about it, plus some fans who remember the originals are going to like it. You know, it's not overkill, which it seems like they're kind of doing with Batman, you know, and other franchises where, you know, they bust out three really good movies and they're like, all right, well, Christian Bale doesn't want to do this anymore. And instead of just, like, taking a break, they quickly hire a new person, you know. I think that's good. I think it's going to be wildly popular, you know, assuming they get good directors and such attached to it. Wow, I'm excited. What about you, Merson?
I'm curious to see, because they put out three movies that were pretty close together, and they were a while ago, if I'm not mistaken. I'm curious to see, like, all the special effects that have advanced in computer technology. I want to see what they can actually do with today's graphics with Jurassic Park, because, I mean, if you look back at those movies, it was brutal, like, to watch some of the graphics that they had. So I'm curious about it.
I remember being a kid and thinking they were amazing.
Oh, yeah. Now you look back at it and you're like, ooh, yikes.
Like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was like a big, drawn to scale issue. Like, here's this huge dinosaur, the Tyrannosaurus that came out of this large, like, 150-foot hole. And, you know, that's when the dinosaur turned the car upside down and was trying to eat the kids through the glass. You know, when the car went over, you saw how far that hole was? Like, it was really, really far down. How did that dinosaur with itty-bitty arms climb up that? I'm sorry. it has to get better. But
don't you ruin Jurassic Park for me.
I love that movie. And I love Samuel L. Jackson where he goes, hold on to your butts. I'm sorry. I'm a sucker for that movie. I am a sucker for that movie. I don't care where it is. When it's playing, if I catch it, it's on. That's what I'm watching. Everybody shut up. Everybody leave me alone. I'm watching Jurassic Park, and then I'm going to get goosebumps because of the theme song. That's what's going to happen. So there it is. But
I
we
think
are
I may have found
last,
your new ringtone.
Challenge accepted. We're down to our last minute, guys. Thank you guys so much. And Chris Burson, thank you for, you know, leaving Miley Cyrus to hang out with us. I know that, you know, we're small, petty little people, but I appreciate you coming on the air, even though I know that you're busy with your day job.
Yeah, I don't know if I consider it busy, but yeah.
Well, apparently you were yelling at somebody, so we're going to have to figure out, we're going to find out what was going on next week. And then remember, the
week
after is
Thanksgiving.
Stay tuned. The week after is Thanksgiving, and we are going to be off, and I hope that you guys are going to celebrate it with your family and your loved ones. Everybody have a great night. Christian, thank you so much. It was awesome. And Chris Burson,
thank
I
you,
hope
sir.
That you are on the air next week.
Sure will.
Have a great night, guys.
Tonight on an all-new Uncensored Radio, we're
later.
Catching up with Ricky Lake.
Hi, it's Ricky.
You won an Emmy for Outstanding Talk Show.
Can you believe it?
You will not want to miss this incredible interview.
You know, and the philosophy that when during your pregnancy you don't even take an aspirin because you don't want to do anything to compromise the fetus.
Right. Sure.
But yet you go into a hospital setting when you're in labor, they hook you up to an IV, they're giving you, you know, Pitocin and all these other drugs.
Let's get to it, and all new Uncensored Radio starts right now.
Are you ready for this one?
UCR. We saying what we want, give it to you non-stop. Any place, any time, not afraid to speak our mind. That's just the way we roll, we never gonna go. Unstoppable, original, Uncensored Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Uncensored Radio, a very, very, very special edition of Uncensored Radio. This show today, guys, oh my goodness, buckle your seatbelts, it's going to get good. We've got Miss Ricky Lake in the house on the show tonight. We are so excited. How is everybody doing? Jeffrey Emmett is in the house also. How are you, Jeffrey?
I am fabulous. I'm just over here kind of like, go, Ricky, go, Ricky, go, 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 Ricky.
It's so exciting, right? It's like we're on the countdown, the big countdown till she calls in. We've got Mike Jay in the house who was responsible for getting this lovely lady on our show. We're so honored. Mike Jay, how are you?
I am doing well, everyone, and I am so excited for when we get to chat with Ricky later. And, you know, on more of a personal note for me, I'm just finally so glad that I booked a real celebrity and not a porn star, so we can finally let that live down.
you are out the doghouse, homeboy, because, yeah, you were one in one on a porn star only. And yeah,
I know, I swear, it was like, you know, book a porn star, and then next thing I know, I was, like, shafted and fired, and it was just bad. I don't want to talk about it.
Exactly. Too hilarious. We also got Miss LaToya Nash in the house. And hi, LaToya. How are you?
I'm well. How's everyone doing? Happy to be here. I'm so excited about Ricky Lake. Oh, my God.
I know. We're Ricky Lake excited. It's like a whole other kind of excitement.
Yeah.
Oh, and as you know, Katrina Johnson will be joining us later for the actual interview. But, yeah, Michael Jay, I mean, let's talk about the butterflies that are in your stomach because you are, to date, the number one Ricky Lake fan ever. And I'm sure people are wondering, how the hell did he go from booking a porn star to actually booking a celebrity like Ricky Lake?
You know,
I'm really curious to hear this, too.
Yeah. How did this happen?
You know, it's actually kind of a very crazy, funny, roundabout story. Back in the day, during Ricky's first talk show, I actually ran a very successful fan website. It started, gosh, back in 1999. Can you believe that? Before the new millennium. You know, and I was all freaked out because, you know, I spent all the time designing the site, and then I thought the whole thing was going to blow up, you know, during Y2K. But, you know, 13 years later, we're still here. I did the website and whatnot, and, you know, in the past probably recent years in my more adult life, you know, I haven't really kept up with it. It's something that it fell by the wayside, you know. And I'm sure, like, you know, Ricky could attest to, we move on, we grow up, and who we were yesterday may not necessarily be who we are today. But I still had the web addresses, the domain names and stuff, and gosh, it seems like it was a month ago now that we've been setting all this up. I got a very strange email from some sort of, you know, privacy service or something, because, you know, being a high-profile public figure that I am, all of my domain names have privacy on them, so you all can't send me Christmas cards with anthrax in it or something. especially all,
yes,
you know.
Because you're going to be the target.
He's so technical.
Well,
he's,
you know,
so technical.
I am. Well, I'm nervous after what I said about Andy Lopez last week. If you didn't listen, go back on demand, myuncensoredradio.com. So, you know, we got emailing back and forth, and then, you know, Jeff got involved with Ricky follows us on Twitter, so we DM'd her. Long story short, we ended up confirming everything with Ricky's assistant, who is fantastic in helping set all this interview up. And, you know, more or less, that's kind of the story.
Shout out to Ricky. What's the assistant's name? Because we got to give them a shout out. I mean,
Caroline. And, you know, Caroline was, you know, great in helping, you know, frame the interview questions with us and get everything all set up and help
hey, girl,
us get,
hi.
Get everything on gear.
Well, you know, what I have to think, too, is Brian. Yeah. He knows who he is. I'm not going to say his last name on the air, but Brian, thank you if you're listening. We love you. And I can't wait to do lunch when we're in L.A.
Right.
Yeah, Brian was a big help, too. It was like, you know, the stars and fate or karma or whatever you believe in just all sort of aligned for this to work out.
Right.
You know, super
psyched. No, but seriously, like, you got to give up the love to, like, these personal assistants because a lot of times you get in touch with their people and the personal assistant will get it and they're the ones who kind of filter through, like, the nonsense and kind of go, yeah, let me ask them, or no. And, you know, they're like the direct link. And so a lot of times it's because of the personal assistant that they actually make a lot of things happen. Like, I don't know, I was a huge fan of Entourage, and I'm not getting off the subject, but, like, Entourage, I love that show because it showed the power of the assistant. Like, everybody had to go through Ari's assistant, and that assistant ended up being a top agent. And, the, you know, it was kind of like the course of what happens. But, yeah, shout out to the assistants who always kind of undercover make things happen for little guys like us. But yeah, because the thing is with someone like Big Lake, I mean, we obviously have some amazing listeners. We've been able to build a show from nothing, from, you know, a couple listeners to over 100,000. And, you know, but having someone like Ricky Lake, it brings, like, a whole different demographic just to listen to us. And we're very honored for you new listeners. So you can listen to us, you know, like they said, Monday through Friday. We're on all the time. And sometimes we have special guests, and sometimes we're just talking about things that are on our minds, what's going on. And we've got, you'll see, a wide variety of crazy hosts that just keep it real and keep it uncensored. So it's almost time for her.
Definitely crazy. You know, I think it's amazing that it started with one little show and now we have multiple shows. We have Jake Pentland on Saturdays. But I think it's crazy and I'm so blessed that we were able to work this out. And, you know, one of the things Ricky's going to be talking about this evening is her documentary, The Business of Being Born, which to me is fascinating, you know, doing the daycare and everything. I love babies. And I think it's so neat. So, girls, would you ever consider a home birth? Like, I think that's the big question, because that's kind of what it's all about, is having a home birth.
Absolutely not.
No.
And Ricky Lake
Absolutely
may change
not.
Her mind after I get to know her and hear how fabulous she is. But after watching the documentary, she is, like, she's more woman than I think I'll ever be. And I commend her. I commend her on so many levels because I admired her. I mean, you think about it. She really... What I admired most about Ricky Lake, what I admired about her talk show back in the day and then her recent talk show, was before that, you know, think about it. Before that, daytime talk was always catered to, like, stay-at-home moms or older demographic. She was really the first talk show that kind of included the rest of us, included the younger demographic, the up-and-coming, you know, younger adults, up-and-coming, you know, you're trying to make it in life. You know, she was the girl who kind of included us, and we got a voice.
Smart lady.
You know, yeah, network TV almost was like, oh, wow, we didn't realize you watched daytime talk also. You know, and so, I mean, I can't wait to meet her, and maybe she can change my mind about home birth, but woo, I don't know.
Let me tell you, nobody's changing my mind. I will be at the hospital with everything they have. Period.
Well, see, here's
but
the thing, Toya.
Do your thing. But here's the other question. Why is everybody saying documentary? I'm just curious.
They messed me up. These weirdos over here who are from the East Coast say it a funny way, and so then they trip up my words.
Documentary.
Like, what?
No, listen, I have been trying to change the way I say my certain sayings and phrasings on this show because you all have made me so...
They say all of them. It's elementary. They say documentary. They say all these, like, funny little words.
I don't know. There's, like,
about.
So much emphasis on the Terry part of it. I mean, honestly, you know, I blame Jeff's fiancé or Jeff's husband's fiancé's. I'm totally tripping that up. Jeff's husband's mother, Teresa, who I nicknamed Terry,
that gets
stuck in my brain. So I just want to say Terry all the time.
Yeah.
No, and she hates that, by the way. She really could punch you in the face every time you call her Terry. She really hates it. But I think it's just because we're closer to England, really. But, yeah, we do have funny things.
Yeah, Buffalo, yeah. New York, but, and Rhode Island are closer to England.
Yeah, that's what it is.
We're,
you know.
Oh, us on the East Coast over here. I'm going to start saying schedule instead of schedule.
Yeah.
Well, and just listen.
Us West Coast girls, we're going to keep it easy and go documentary. Right?
So,
did I say
when
that?
Ricky
did they mess me up again?
No,
no
did.
You didn't.
Still saying it like this. It's documentary.
See?
And
they
can't blame it on British because it would be...
Documentary.
It would be... Exactly. Documentary.
So,
period.
We all just need to pay attention. We won't say anything to Ricky, but let's hear how she says it because her first show was filmed in New York. So it'll be a little test. So everybody pay attention. Listeners, pay attention, and we'll see how Ricky says it. And then we'll discuss it tomorrow.
We should have a drinking game every time the word documentary is said. Our documentary.
Oh, no. I don't think we'd make it through the... We wouldn't make it through 60 minutes of show.
Take a shot of tequila every time you hear it.
I was like, was there a press release? Was there... I mean, because that's just like people... You know, after grad school, well, during grad school, I learned that it is now, you know, it has been for a while PC to just say actor. There's no more actress because an actor by design can play anyone. We don't say lawyeress. We don't say dentist-esque. We don't say doctoress.
Right.
So why say actress? And if you look at some of the award show now, shows now, they say female actor or male actor. And it is so funny when I meet people and they say, they ask what I do, and I say I'm a singer and an actor, and they say, oh, you mean actress? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, like you don't know the work that you actually do. No, that is a very interesting point.
They immediately think you're dumb. They immediately think you're dumb because you're actually in an industry that's built on hopes and dreams.
I mean actor, and I have to break it down to them, and then they're like, but I mean, come on. Like, you don't just, I just told you what I did, and you tried to correct me on it. Hilarious. So,
well, you know,
I didn't know if something came out about documentary or what. I was like, is that what we're doing now? Documentary.
Well, you know, when we were in school, like, the teacher, Michael, would always try to, you know, pick up different words or, you know, say things differently. So he'd be like, you know, the process. Not the process,
ew,
the process. Or mature.
I watched a lot of BBC as a kid, okay? BBC America? Anybody? Anybody? No?
Yes,
right.
I love it. I love
no.
it.
All your fault, Jay.
Yeah, I blame Mike.
But they say documentary in British. They would say documentary. They wouldn't say documentary. They wouldn't do
they
it.
They would. You're right about that.
It.
I'm not sure where the Terry thing comes in. I still blame Joe's mom, but, you know.
They're really funny because he doesn't say bagel. He says bagel. Like, and it's a Buffalo thing because we question some of his friends.
To, like, addiction. Like, he needs to learn the proper pronunciation of things, Mike J. Do you need a class for that?
Why are you all picking on me all of a sudden? Jeff is the one that starts. He says it too. He's the one that says elementary.
He does.
Documentary.
It's your fault.
It ain't right.
No, it's not my fault.
Okay, I got to get back to this. Now, girls, see, here's the thing you don't understand. You're all like, no, 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 the home birth, and we'll talk about it more later. But 70%, 70 to 80%, every other country but the USA, births happen with midwives and they're at home. Like, it's crazy. Like, in America.
That's wonderful for them. I'm just saying I'm going to be at the hospital.
Well, no, and I think that's something like that's the great thing I think about this documentary.
Please get it right.
Still can't say it.
I know. Shush. Oh,
you did good.
I'm working it out. Is, you know, they present both sides in this. You know, it's not like, you need to go do this. It's not judgy. It's not throwing it in your face. Yeah. But it's just giving you the information. And that's what I really love about it. And the fact that she took her time to put her name on something like this, that's just educating women and to let them know you do have options and there is choices. And a lot of the things that, you know, we think are accurate about birth may not necessarily be completely accurate. So it's just, it's really educational, and it's a fun video. And if you get emotional when babies are born or weddings, like, you probably want to make sure you have a box of Kleenex, because I cried a bitch.
And then listen, I mean, think about it. Like, most of us, at least, at minimum, our grandparents were born with midwives, you know.
Right.
It's not uncommon, and you're not that far away from, you know, the non-hospital birth. That you're not that many generations away from it. So
really,
like,
not.
I'm not saying in any way that it is a lesser approach there. And like you said, it's good to know that there are options. I'm just that type. If there's that one thing that could go wrong, it's usually me.
Right. Well, see,
you know,
and that's what
the fine print. That's me.
You know, it's so funny you mentioning about being born, you know, the generational thing, because my grandmother on my mom's side was actually born at home, and they put her in the oven to keep her warm. It was like during a really cold, snowy winter night. Yeah. Yeah, for real.
There you go.
They put, that is not the opinion of UCR. That is the opinion of Mike J. The fact of what happened to his crazy-ass relatives in upstate New York in a blizzard. Please do not put your baby in an oven, because you will go to jail and be charged.
I'm not saying do an oven birth. I think he's just saying, you know, we're not that far away from other types of birth plans.
Right, right. I mean, Ricky did it in the bathtub. My great grandmother did it in an oven. You know, potato, potato.
Only on this show.
Man,
oh, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, Dr. Collier and bachelor's degree, Mike, those are very interesting stories.
I know, right? I know. Well, I know
very
for a fact my
opinions.
Dad. I know for a fact my dad was born at home with a midwife and taken to the hospital the next day. So, and he, you know, he wasn't born in a major city. He was born in, like, a very rural area. So even though my mom was born in a hospital because she was born in a major city, he was not. And that's not, you know, that's my dad. And he's fine and healthy and wonderful.
Right.
So there
are
options, people.
That is crazy. So does that make me the oddball that I was born in the back of a cab?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Really?
I was not born. No, no, but that would have been great, though, if it was true.
That would make you so much cooler. I'm just
kidding. Stuck with a cab story, Mama.
Where's the mother's place when we
need her?
She's
I know. But you know what's crazy, though? It's like in these videos with the natural birth, like, you know, you see in the, you know, hospital, you're watching TV, and these women are screaming, and the baby's, like, barely coming out, and the doctor's got to pull the baby. With these home births, like, they really need a baseball mitt, because the baby's just poof right out. It is the craziest thing ever. It's just, and they're like, grab the baby, grab the baby, grab the baby. It's like, you know, it really is like playing hot potato, because you got to grab that bitch when it comes out you, because you don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, it's amazing. So you have to check it out.
Wow.
You never know.
And babies
I'm
are not
sorry.
Bitches, by the way. Do not pay.
I was about to say, yeah, can you repeat that? You got
hoping, I was hoping nobody caught that. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm vulgar. It happens.
We caught
you
it,
know,
and everyone else caught it.
You either ruin the joke or you have to point out my mistake. You're all a bunch of bitches.
Always. Yes,
you.
We are. And thank
Nobody
you.
Nobody thinks that's new, Jeff. Nobody's surprised by
welcome.
That. We're like, yeah, okay.
Didn't we do a whole show on that at one point?
Very well.
Yeah.
We probably did. I'm sure.
Probably did. Only on Uncensored Radio. No, and that's and we say thank you and you're welcome at the same time.
Right?
Yeah.
We just don't mind the letters. Because you know the listeners will write us a letter and say, why is Jeffrey referring to unborn babies as bitches? We don't want any letters. Don't write us any letters. He's just very colorful in his language.
I'm sorry. I got
Can
confused. I was thinking of a
question about the documentary. I have a question about the documentary for those who've seen it, because I have not. Are they just pointing out options, or are they saying why hospital births are bad? Like, which
no,
is
they're not saying
the
hospital births. They're not saying that
no.
it's bad at all.
They're just showing you the beautifulness of a home birth and having a midwife, and they show you one. Like, you see Ricky Lake having a baby. Like, it's deep.
And her executive producer, Abby, has she, Abby was having, she had a midwife, and there was complications, so she ended up having to go to the hospital. So it was actually great because you got to see, you know, like, and you have to have a pregnancy that low risk, you know, because otherwise they do suggest you go into a hospital. But they do talk
right.
about in the United States, we have one of the highest infant and mother fatality rates in the world. It's actually disgusting. I think we're number two in the world for infant death. You know, it bursts. Like, it's kind of disgusting. And, you know, they talk about the drugs, Pitocin, and I cannot remember the name of the other one, that they were giving all throughout the 90s, and then they realized, like, there was birth defects and babies were dying and it caused all these other issues. So they're like, oh, we're not going to use that anymore. Right. Well, no, they still use Pitocin, but it was another drug that I cannot remember what the name is. That is not on the market anymore.
Jeff, we have the highest number of what?
Infant and mother fatalities, like in industrialized countries. Let me add that part
wow.
in.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really scary when you actually look at the statistics.
Compared to Europe, you know, the statistics, like Jeff was pointing out, compared to Europe, we're on the other side of this, you know. And it's really mind-blowing. And one of the things I know you guys are going to take away from speaking with Ricky when we do that, you know, the next half of the show, it's all about choices. She's not presenting a one-sided argument. She's really sort of tearing the tape off or tearing the Band-Aid off to all these possibilities so that women and families have a clear choice of A and B. Because, you know, as it seems,
right.
really only A is being presented in the healthcare industry.
Right.
Right.
Well,
and,
you know,
well, and the thing is, they talk about – sorry, go ahead.
No, I was actually going to say I'm really excited to get more clarification from her and just kind of get more information about it. But I'm also excited because I want to hear, like, you know, what's she up to now. I want to get the scoop on the, you know, talk show she recently had. I mean, I kind of want, like, the actor in me kind of wants, I want to see Ricky Lake in another movie. Like, I just think she's a wonderful actor, you know. So I'm excited to hear about this, but I'm sure, you know, we're going to ask her a lot of questions about a lot of other topics as well as, you know, get the scoop on the documentary. So it's
right.
going to be a pretty amazing interview we've got. I mean, we've been planning for weeks of questions, and we got a lot of questions from our listeners. They've been Facebooking. They've been, you know, in our chat room. They're posting questions as we speak. So, you know, it's very, very exciting. Because we're going to try to throw some of those in, but we've worked really hard, and Mike Day's worked really hard on producing the show. So it's going to get good because, you know, Ricky, I mean, I've seen her on other interviews, and she's not shy. She's very honest, and she's very upfront, and, you know, she just says it like it is. So it just gets exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, you know, Mike and I were just talking about before the show is the movies she's been in, and one of my favorites was Baby Cakes. And the fact that, you know, somebody, she went to college in Ithaca, and, you know, just being in all the John Waters films, and, you know, and she's mentioned, you know, she was obese, and she was in all these movies, she got the talk show, like, she's kind of had an amazing story and ride, you know, and I don't think it's typical for somebody to have the success that she had starting when you're overweight, so I think it's amazing, you know, and she's one of the lucky ones, so I'm kind of curious to see what she has to say about all that.
Me too. So, I mean, we're seconds away, minutes away from Ricky Lake. I mean, Mike Day, have you peed your pants yet? That's what I need to know.
No, trust me. Before the interview, I cleared my schedule. I took like half a day off from work to be able to make this all happen. And it's a funny story when we were speaking with her, you know, the one day, you know, we scheduled this. And I come home, and I'm thinking, it's the middle of the day. It should be quiet. And there's some guy in the apartment next to mine, like, banging. I was, you know, Jeff was there. I was, like, freaking out on the phone. I'm like, really? The one day, and someone next door has to be pounding.
Well, that's the thing. You're usually at work, so you don't know. He might bang every day, and you just don't know
true.
That that's what he does when you're not there.
This is very true. I mean, you know, Slatersville, Rhode Island could be a very happening place when I'm not here.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man. But, yeah, no, my heart's pounding. I'm excited, you know, because, like I said, she's just an amazing woman. She's an amazing actress. She's so accomplished, and she's obviously inspiration to us all because she kind of let us into her world every afternoon, you know? And it's like, it's one of those things, like, you feel like you know Ricky. You feel like you know Oprah. You feel like you know these people because you watch them every day. So it's like, I can't wait to, like, have a second and just hear her voice. And
Did she have the home birth? How long ago was the birth?
I want to say it was, well, it was with her second, and he's 12, so you figure 12 years ago.
Oh.
I'm not good with math.
Wow.
I'm not good with math.
Well, 12 years ago. That's all I need to know. 12 years ago.
Probably. Approximately. Like, she actually filmed it. Like, it's one thing to do it, and, like, but she filmed it. So, I mean, it's like there's no other reason. I mean, she really exposed herself emotionally, mentally. I mean,
physically. There's
no other... There's nothing other, you know, more exposing than birth.
No, I mean, I have to say, and I know Jeff will agree with me on this one, like, I thought I was going to be totally grossed out because if you guys haven't seen the documentary, it's on Netflix, it's on iTunes. You will really, really, no hands down, if you see the articles or anything, you will see Ricky Lake uncensored give birth to her second son, Owen.
You see a whole different side of Ricky Lake.
I thought I was going to be utterly grossed out on the floor, you know, as a straight up, you know, gay man. Ew. It was really beautiful. I mean, I was like, tears. Like, oh my God.
Well, Michael, you need to point out that you're not saying that you were going to be grossed out by Ricky Lake, but
no,
by somebody giving birth.
By birth. I mean, seriously, the whole thought of it. But
no,
it was
very
really
beautiful.
And what really blew my mind was, and I mean, you guys can probably attest to this too, like, you know, we all have watched General Hospital, Days of Our Lives, you know, Grey's Anatomy. And we've seen, you know, dramatized birth where the woman is up, her legs are in the air, and there's a sheet, and people are screaming, and there's blood, and a baby pops out. Seeing Ricky's documentary and then the follow-up blew my mind of what I thought birth was. I mean, you guys have probably had this experience. You thought something was one way, and then it turns out it's completely another, or can be completely another way. Blew my mind. Really incredible.
I think it's getting close to that time.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, it's Ricky.
Hi, Ricky.
How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good. Am I calling at the right time?
Yeah. Yes, you're right on. But,
the Virgo and me.
It is a absolute pleasure to have you here on Uncensored Radio with us. You know, actor, talk show host, writer, and documentary filmmaker. It's such an honor to have you here with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Great to be here.
Thank you. Well, you know, you won an Emmy for Outstanding Talk Show. That
can you believe
has to
it?
Be...
It was probably one of the biggest shocks of my life, honestly, because, and I'll be completely honest, you know, the show, the last, you know, I did my old show for 11 years, and I was, I think, nominated once, but, you know, there was a lot of backlash in the media about the show being, you know, whatever, not good for young people. I mean, I think our show back then in the 90s was really a reflection of what young people were interested in, you know, it reflected who they were. And like it or not, you know, good and bad, it was really, you know, there were a lot of baby mama, you know, drag out things happening on the show. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, heat and there was a lot of fun. So we weren't recognized, you know, critically with my old show. And with the new one, you know, my idea with the new show was really that after making The Business of Being Born and doing more sort of advocacy, women's advocacy focused projects, I wanted to do something where I felt like I could, you know, make a difference along the lines of Phil Donahue and the way he was, you know, something that was, you know, real meaningful television. That was the goal, and it didn't turn out to be that. You know, we did a handful of shows that I'm really, really proud of. We covered subjects in the last year on, you know, transgender children and weight loss. And I mean, some of the things were near and dear to my heart, but for the most part, the company that I was employed by really didn't have the same vision that I did, you know. And, you know, the show was canceled, and I was praying that it would be. I mean, I was just really unhappy and felt like, you know, this is not a project that was I did for money or I did to, you know, stay relevant. I did it because I felt like there was something to be said, you know, in this arena. And, you know, for whatever reason, it didn't pull in the audience. We didn't have great time periods. And one of the big things that happened is that we were cleared in a, in a station in New York City that was on strike last September when we launched. So for the first, I think, month and a half, 2 months, we didn't have an audience in the number one market in the country. So that kind of really was disappointing. But in the end, right, when we had heard we were being canceled, and I was, of course, celebrating, you know, by myself, I found out that I was nominated, and I thought it was a joke. I thought I was on camera, candid camera. I was like, you're kidding. There's no way. You know, it was just one of those things that I was just so taken aback. And I was going away on my vacation. My husband and I love to go to Spain. We go to Ibiza as much as we possibly can. And we had booked this trip, and so it basically conflicted with the Emmys, the daytime Emmys. And my friends are saying, you have to change your flight. You have to change your plans. I'm like, okay, it's a joke that I was nominated in the first place. There's no way I'm going to win. I'm not changing my plans. So I went to Ibiza and literally forgot about the Emmys. I'm not kidding. I forgot that it was even happening. Because I never in a million years thought that, Steve Harvey was nominated, and Dr. Oz, and Anderson Cooper, all these, amazingly talented hosts.
Sure.
I never in a million years thought that I'd have a chance in hell. And so I was asleep. You know, we had been out all day at the beach. I mean, we were complete. I was in a coma in Ibiza. And our phone started blowing up at 4 in the morning, and my husband got out of bed and picked up one of the phones. I thought it was my kids or something. He thought it was my kids. And he's like, babe, you won. And my first response was, won what? I didn't even know. Wow. I didn't even know. And then I just laughed for 20 minutes. I thought it was so funny. You know, I thought the company I'd worked for, and particularly this executive that was in charge of my show, and you know, he was horrible. I just knew it was the biggest kick in the ass to him that here I was honored. Just the biggest accolade. I mean, I honestly, I'm so grateful to have been, you know, to have won this award. I can't believe I can forever to my grave say that Emmy Award winning, you know, and I did work really hard, and I really gave it my all, but in the end, you know, I guess I only had to give a year, and I got that beautiful, precious award that I have sitting proudly in my living room.
Well, you did some really great stuff on that show. I mean, the one episode that sticks out with me, I started doing the clean diet lifestyle.
You did? Oh,
yeah,
really?
Because that guy with the cancer, and I've always struggled with my weight, so it really kind of, you know, stuck with me, and I was like, I had already just started it, so it was kind of amazing to see that on TV.
I mean, there were moments, but I mean, I want to give you, like, an example. Like, I wanted to take it further. I wanted it to, you know, I felt like I really fought to do the shows on birth. You know, I got to do two in the season, and I, you know, but those were my producer, my director, Abby Epstein. We had to really fight to get it the way we wanted it. You know, they wanted to, like, throw in some, I mean, it's sort of hard to describe. I mean, I nitpick because I really did have a vision for the show. I wanted to take topics and go deeper, and I think that's what I really believe the audience wants takeaway.
Absolutely.
They want more substance than fluff. And, you know, I guess, you know, the company I was employed by disagreed with me, and, you know, they went out and, you know, did Kris Jenner after me. You know, and I felt like, in watching a few of those shows, I felt like, you know what, she's the kind of talent that they should have had from the beginning. You know, not that she's, you know, she just is what she is, and it's, she's more fluff, you know, she's more about like, oh, where'd you get that sweater? You know, and I'm more of like, okay, you know, one example, I remember I fought to do an hour on circumcision. I fought, like, really, and my the executive in charge was like, you know, he's like, it's not complex enough. You either cut it or you don't. Like this was his take on it. I'm like, you don't understand. This is like, this is a really topical conversation. It's a hot button topic, pun intended.
Absolutely.
You know, and anyway, we did do an hour on circumcision, and I did feel like it was a pretty good show. I think it could have been better, you know. But again, I think I'm not who I am today is not right for that genre anymore, you know. And not that I'm better than it or anything like that. I just think I have higher, I don't know, you know, after making my documentary, The Business of Being Born, and seeing this very personal project that I funded myself, I came up with the idea, I'd had this experience of two profound birth experiences, I put my, you know, money where my mouth is, I worked on it for 3.5 years, I took a lot of heat when it came out, the AMA came after us, And seeing the impact that this little baby project has had on the world, not just in the country, but, like, you know, our home birth rate in the country has skyrocketed in the last, you know, I don't know, last few years. And a lot of people are crediting our film for educating and empowering mothers-to-be with the choices that they have. I mean, that's where I'm at in my life. That's the kind of impact I want to have. And, yes, it'll be on a smaller scale because I can't expect a studio to get behind, you know, my little ideas that I have. But that's okay. You know, I was lucky enough to make enough money in my earlier career that I can, you know, wait for those smaller, more meaningful opportunities to come my way.
Absolutely. And it really shows in the documentary, The Business of Being Born, how personal it really was for you. I mean, you were...
I laid it all out. I mean, you know, I still look back on it and think, how could I possibly have put that, let them use that footage of me giving birth? As much as it's an incredible moment, you know, it's not a very flattering image, you know. I was terrified of that. But you know, I mean, I think you got to be fearless, especially when it comes to something you really believe in so strongly. So, you know, it was a great life lesson for me, and I'm so proud of this film. And anybody that comes up to me and tells me how much that film moved them or impacted them and their choices and their future, you know, in having children, or, I mean, that's what I want my legacy to be, you know. And it's been the most rewarding project probably of my life.
And it's a really fantastic one. It really, really is. I run a daycare by day, and we have a foster child. And, you know, kids are my life. So watching a documentary, like, I was so moved. Like, every time a baby was born, I was crying. It was ridiculous. My husband's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, you are watching with me tonight. We're watching it. You're going to sit down, and you're going to watch this baby come out of Ricky Lake because it's the most amazing thing that I've ever seen. And the fact that you were brave enough to put that on there just was amazing to me.
I give a lot of credit. I thank you so much. I give a lot of credit to Abby Epstein, who's my partner in crime, and she was amazing because, you know, we were friends. We'd worked together on a play called The Vagina Monologues in New York, and we became friends. You know, and when I told her I was having a home birth, I was pregnant right around the time we were working together, and she was like, you're crazy. I mean, she was not even thinking of having children. She didn't even know what a midwife was when I hired her. And, you know, got pregnant halfway through the making of the film and then was brave enough to let us turn the cameras on her. And ultimately what happened to her in the film really kind of gave the film a lot of balance. And, you know, she's amazing. And, you know, I think it's amazing to be able to have an empowered and beautiful birth experience and, of course, a healthy baby. But that possibility, that opportunity really stays with you in every other aspect of your life. When a woman can feel, can get in touch with her power and can be an active participant during the most incredible rite of passage, I think, in your lifetime. You know, when you're born, you're born, you can give birth, and you die. I mean, I can't think of any other, you know, more meaningful and profound experiences. But to be able to feel your power and to connect and to feel like you're in charge of your body and to see life come out of you, you know, I mean, it's just an opportunity that I don't want women to not have because of, you know, misinformation or fear, you know.
No, I think that's great.
And let me also add that I'm not telling people that the only way to give birth is drug-free and out of a hospital. I'm not saying that at all. I mean, you can have an empowered birth anywhere. And, you know, so it's just, I try to be very clear that I don't want necessarily women to do exactly what I do. It's not, you know, I'm not saying that at all. I just want people to have the education and to have access to choice.
Well, I know, of course. I think that's really, you know, one of the things that is put out there in the film is it's all about choice. And I think one of the things that I actually took away when I was watching it and I wanted to ask you about was it seems like when you end up in the hospital or when women end up in the hospital, is there some sort of their decision-making ability on themselves is taken away? It seems like everything is just turned over to the doctors.
Well, I mean, I don't want to generalize 100% because I do think there's amazing hospitals out there. There's amazing obstetricians that really think like more like a midwife. I mean, you know, but yes, I mean, look at the hospital system. You know, we grew up thinking doctors know best. You know, you in a hospital setting is scary. It's where people go to die and are sick and need medical intervention. But when you're pregnant, I believe it's not an illness. You're not sick. you know, but if you have a, obviously a high-risk situation or you have a complicated pregnancy and issues, I mean, certainly a hospital is where you want to be when that is the case. But my philosophy is, you know, when I got pregnant, I was healthy, and I had no, you know, issues that came up with either of my children. And I really, you know, really love the midwifery profession and the way they, you know, they treat pregnancy and delivery and labor. So, but it's a personal choice, and it's, you know, most women in this country are much more comfortable in a hospital setting, and I understand that. But I think, you know, when you look at the pros and cons of all the interventions that are given as a protocol, you know, just as a norm, you know, the minute you walk in the hospital, they hook you up to an IV. I mean, I didn't like that. I why do I need fluid? I'm going to drink on my own. You know, I just question the protocols that are put in place. But that was, again, my own personal choice.
But I think it's really scary for women. And, you know, just having the daycare, and I run into so many expecting moms, I always suggest that they watch your video. And I have a friend that just did a home birth. She's had two now. And she said it's the most amazing experience of her life, and she's actually coming over this weekend with her video. I can't wait to watch it.
Oh, that's awesome. I love
those
videos. I love particularly ones that are out of hospital. You know, they're incredible. Yeah. Oh, I've been able to attend a few births, and there is this magic electricity that is in the air, and it takes your breath away. It's magic.
Absolutely.
You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And, you know, I have to say, and I don't know if you've seen the follow-up series we did, you know, because Abby and I felt like, you know, this movie kept having this life after it was released. And, you know, we decided to do a follow-up series, which is more of an educational tool. It's like a four-part series where we go deeper on VBAC, which is vaginal birth after cesarean, which is a very difficult thing to have done here in this country because of, you know, insurance and malpractice and hospital rules. So it's really for people that want more information. We did a whole thing on C-sections, on doulas, and we had all these incredible high-profile moms, like Cindy Crawford, Giselle Bundchen, Alanis Morissette, Allison Hannigan, Christy Turlington, all these amazing, amazing women who came forward to talk about their incredible birth experiences, many in hospital, many at home. And, again, it's like having these great positive stories are so great to hear when you're pregnant, you know, rather than the scary, you know, ones that some people like to share. So it's been just an incredible project of love, you know, to put all this information out there for women.
I think it's phenomenal. And one of the installments in More Business and Being Born, you sat down with Ida Mae Gaskin, director of the farm community in Summertown. Now that was really interesting to me. One of the points that I took from that she was kind of bringing up was, you know, all these cocktail mixtures of drugs that we're, you know, putting in during the delivery process. We don't really know what they're doing.
Right. Well, we don't know the long-term effects, you know, and you know, yes, it's like you think about autism and all these ailments that we, you know, that weren't talked about in whatever, the 60s or 70s,
right.
You know, and I'm not claiming that there's a connection at all because I don't know, but we do have to look at these drugs that are given to women, you know, and the philosophy that when during your pregnancy you don't even take an aspirin because you don't want to do anything to compromise the fetus,
right. Sure.
But yet you go into a hospital setting when you're in labor, they hook you up to an IV, they're giving you, you know, Pitocin and all these other drugs, you know, where that theory is just thrown out the window, it seems.
Well, and it was so surprising to me to know that in other countries, it's like 70 to 80% is all midwives, and then the amount of drugs that we're giving these women, and then the drugs, they find out after the 90s that it's not okay, and the infant death rate, it was astounding to me that more people don't know, and they're not aware of this. And it's kind of sad to me.
It is, but we're changing that, I think. You know, it's
absolutely
just like one person. And I really encourage women to share their great birth stories. You know, if they have a great doctor or a great care provider that treated them like a person and not a number, you know, to share that story with their friends in their local, you know, neighborhood, that they, you know, because that'll, you know, when we can fight for what we want, you know, the consumer has a lot of power, and when we know more, we can create change and really change the system so that everyone can feel empowered during this most precious time in their lives.
And I love the fact too in this documentary that you call like designer birth with C-sections, and something I've noticed, I remember being a kid and like the C-section was kind of like, oh, something happened, and it was kind of almost an emergency, so you had to have a C-section. And now everyone I know is having a C-section, it seems. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, what changed that people now are scheduling the birth of their child?
Yeah, it's all the rage, it seems. I don't know. I mean, I think it's changing. But the idea that, you know, women think that it's easier or, you know, easier on your body or your, you know, your vagina stays intact. I guess that's guaranteed pretty much if your baby doesn't come out your vagina. But but, you know, it's major abdominal surgery that
right.
takes a really long time to recover from. It's, you know, in many cases you can't even hold your baby for a while, which interrupts, you know, the potential of breastfeeding and bonding. And, you know, I mean, you're on painkillers. I mean, it doesn't sound appealing to me. But then again, there are women out there that want to know when they're, you know, the day that they can schedule their baby being born, and, you know, they can have their nails done and their whatever, you know. And
yeah.
many cases it is medically necessary. So, you know,
right.
if you need a C-section, I mean, certainly it's great that you can be in a country where it's pretty much very safe to have it done here.
Absolutely.
But I'm really grateful that I didn't have to have that surgery.
You know,
well, I always thought that was the way to go because I could get a tummy tuck at the same time and everything would be bada boom, bada bing, good as new or even better. But when I saw in Business of Being Born that if you just use oil and if you take your time that they don't have to cut you and that it just you naturally stretch there, I thought that was a much better option.
Yeah, I'll share some information about me. I mean, maybe it's too much information, but during my second birth, which the one you see in the film, I pushed for 13 minutes, 3 contractions, and my midwife came back and checked me the next day or something and did a checkup and said that it didn't even look like I had a baby. I mean, when you're in water, it's very gentle on your body, you know, and the baby. But for me, I mean, you know, yes, I pushed out an 8-pound baby and didn't even look 24 hours later like I'd had one.
Well,
so
one of the things I noticed, too, like the minute you pushed out the baby, like every mom stopped. Like the pain, it just looked like the pain stopped and you all were just so in love. And when she's like, grab the baby, and you had the baby on your chest, I was just moving.
Oh
and
my
amazing.
God! I still. I mean, just you even talking about it. You know, that baby is 12 years old. It's a really long time ago. My sons are 16 and 12, and it's like it was yesterday. You know, it's like that moment. That I mean, it really, and you know, it's a very heavy, intense thing for me as a woman, someone who beat myself up about my body my whole life. You know, I was obese for much of my, you know, early adult years. I've struggled with my weight. You know, that in that moment when you see what your body is able to do on its own, there is an incredible sense of healing that takes place, or at least happened to me. So it went beyond becoming a mother. It went beyond, you know, like having this, like, you know, this ability to pat myself on the back for doing something. I mean, it really was like a healing. And again, I'm so grateful to have had that chance to have that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to watch. So I can't even imagine what it was like to live through it. And I find it, you know, after talking to my friend with the home birth, the thing that's really interesting to me is, like, because you had the first baby in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
second baby at home, it had to be so much more comfortable being home and having the baby and being able to bond and not having the nurses.
It was awesome. I mean, one thing that happened after I gave birth in the bathtub, I remember staying in the tub for, I don't know, I delivered the placenta in the tub, so it was probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes. And then we got up and I, you know, rinsed myself off, got in my bed the whole time, like holding my baby, got into bed with my son, you know, and we, you know, were bonding and he was breastfeeding a little. And my midwife, I don't know, it must have been an hour or so after he was born, she asked my permission to check him over, you know, to weigh him and do his vitals. And I couldn't believe it. It's like the idea of that happening in a hospital where they ask permission to the patient for anything. It was just a lovely gesture, you know. And she did it right on the bed. You know, she brought out like a fish scale and weighed him in front of me. And, you know, it was all just very loving and gentle and no bright lights and, you know, no people with gloves. You know, I guess she did have gloves on, but it wasn't like this crazy, sterile, weird, you know, I don't know, it just not intimate. You know, being at home was just so great. I wouldn't change a thing about it.
It really is amazing. And that kind of leads me into my next question is, you know, in your book that you wrote about a year ago, Never Say Never, Finding a Life That Fits, you have an incredible story of reinventing yourself. So what's next for you, Ricky Lake?
That is a really good question. I mean, I'm really, you know, I finished shooting the show in March, and we went off the air in September. And I'm currently working on a couple projects, you know, one with Abby, my partner from the Business Being Born series. We're making a documentary that my husband's also working on about integrative medicine. And it's been really interesting. I mean, it's really hard because I'm not in a position to finance another film, and so I've been financing it thus far, and I just can't keep doing it. I don't have a job anymore. I describe myself as fun employed. You know, so I'm not. So we've cut it. We've shot a bunch, and it's fascinating. We cover cannabis as an option for alternative treatment to cancers and all kinds of other stuff. But we're also focusing on other modalities, and it's really exciting. Again, it's like what I'd love to do is bring this kind of information to an audience in a upscale kind of way, where I'm not telling people what to do. It's very kind of easy to swallow information. That's hi, my husband just walked in. I'm doing a radio show. Awesome. I'm also, you know, I also have this project called Breast Milk that Abby and I are executive producing, which again is like, you know, information for women who are having children, thinking of having children, and the issue of breastfeeding, and which is so important. You know, it really is. Yeah, so it's a great project that I'm actually coming to New York next week to promote, which it's premiering at the Doc near NYC Doc New York Film Festival. I think that's the name of it, and it's a wonderful first time director, and the film is a great compliment to the movies we've already made, you know, and to be promoting it and premiering it under the umbrella of The Business of Being Born.
Now, is it going to be like talking about breastfeeding into like toddler stage and as the children get older?
It's really early on. It's really early on. But it definitely touches on that. But it's really, you know, the complications, the stigma, the
right.
heart, you know, how tough it is with working moms and,
right.
you know, and how it's such a personal thing and women beat themselves up when they have complications with it, which, you know, a lot of the times that there are sort of issues and things that come up, is, you know, sometimes because of the birth experience. So we cover all of it in this film, and it's really enlightening information that I think, you know, needs to be heard.
I think it definitely does.
Started.
We've talked so many times on the show about the stigma of women, you know, breastfeeding on the subway or wherever, and people, like, having this horrible reaction. And, you know, again, like having the daycare, like I have moms coming in on their lunch break, breastfeeding, you know, they'll come in the morning and breastfeed before they leave. They come lunch break when they get back. And, you know, I have a mom now and her baby is going to be 2 and she's still breastfeeding. And I think it's fantastic. And difference between a child that's breastfed, you know, and she's lucky enough to be able to do it and, you know, didn't have milk production issues. It's just amazing, you know, and to see the developmental growth of this child kind of exceed what a child that was on formula is just kind of amazing. So think if you can do it, you know, it's great.
Yeah. Well, and I think if we as a society can make it easier for women to do it, you know, both
right.
in the workforce and, you know, the stigma, you know, it's like the idea that it's like sexual in any way sexual or, you know, I just don't get it. But,
no, me neither.
You know, but again, I think this film is going to shed some light and definitely get a conversation starting. I mean, just the poster alone. I don't know if you've seen the poster, but it's like a woman squirting breast milk.
it's
provocative. It's definitely provocative. and I that's what I love about what I get to do with my career is like pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, and for a reason, for a cause, you know. And it's thrilling.
And we need to be able to sort of bring light to these hot-button issues that need to be talked about.
And not just in, like, a, you know, 5 minutes of The View with Whoopi
right,
Goldberg.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, I mean, God love those women, but it's great when you can actually really delve into something that, you know, that society is, you know, it wants to know more about, you know.
I think it's definitely such a big thing. And it's so great that there's now these videos because, you know, especially like in daycare fields or, you know, anybody that works with kids and you have expecting moms and they have questions and they come to you and it's great to be able to say, you need to go watch this video because mm-hmm. it's going to help answer a lot of questions, especially about home birth or breastfeeding. Like, I think it's great and I think it's a tool that I would hope, and I know I'm pushing for it in the training things for daycare, that, you know, we can offer these videos to women, especially that call in and have questions or, you know, they come on interviews and they're expecting their first child and they just, you know, they just start asking because they're like, you're a child care provider, so you've got to have answers.
Right. No, I agree. And one thing, you know, we were able to do is make an educational version of the business of being born with the help of Choices in Childbirth. They helped us cut, like, I think it's a 28-minute version of the film with a study guide that's now being taught all over colleges and universities in the country. So in women's studies class, ethics class, medical school, nursing school, I mean, it's so great to be able to reach, you know, people before they are even thinking of planning to have a family. So it's awesome.
No, it really is. It's very educational and informative, and I know that we've got two very career-driven women on our show here, Katrina Johnson and Karen Ashley, who, you know, family is kind of in the back of their mind, but I think it's important that for all women and even men like myself, after watching your films, I have an idea of something that I had no idea even existed. I guess I had a certain image in my head that birth happened in a hospital, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, it can be that way, and you can also change the way in which it's done in the hospital. You know, you really do have rights. Everybody has rights when they go there to speak what, you know, what their wishes are. You sometimes have to fight really hard to get what you want, but it can happen, you know. But thank you. Yeah, I feel like what, you know, the movie really was the film that I wished I had seen when I was first planning to have children. That was really the goal. And so I feel like it's a gift. It's a gift for people that are just starting that process.
Absolutely. And courageous for you to put your name on something like that. You know, I feel like there's so many celebrities that could do so much, and you putting your name on this project, and everybody knows who you are. I don't think there's anybody in the country that doesn't know who Ricky Lake is. So I think it's an amazing thing that you've done for women. And, you know, we applaud you for it.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's the thing I'm most proud to put my name on out of anything I've done. I mean, I love that I've had these opportunities with John Waters and my start, you know, making Hairspray and being an actress for so many years. But, I mean, it's really the one project that I you know, that's what I want to be known for is the fact that I was able to you know, shed some light on this very important subject matter.
So, Ricky, I know we are, like, really low on time, but I have to get this in because we've got a lot of really young fans. And also me. I'm an actor. They all are aspiring actors. We want to know, what is your advice for someone who wants to get into the business? Like, what kind of advice can you give them?
I am so bad at giving advice. First of all, I feel like I'm one in a million. I got so lucky. I was in my first year of college in upstate New York. I was miserable. I wanted to get out desperately, and John Waters, like, saved me from that experience. You know, and I didn't really have any formal training. I was, you know, obese, you know, so I became, like, the leading lady as a fat. I mean, my story is not typical. But I think, you know, advice that was given to me by John Waters, he said to me, always stay humble, always stay true to yourself, and don't let any of this all go to your head. You know, it's really trying to keep your feet on the ground and believe in yourself, you know. I think everyone is unique. Everyone has something special about themselves. And they need to, you know, focus on that and believe in themselves.
Absolutely.
Does that sound okay?
Great advice.
I mean, you know, I think that advice that John gave me when I was 18 years old has stayed with me. You know, I feel like I had this extraordinary, you know, incredible life journey. I mean, I love that I've had all these opportunities to reinvent myself, to try new things, to prove myself in different areas. And, you know, I'm still here, and I'm still, my feet are on the ground, and overall, I'm really grateful.
It's fantastic.
Absolutely.
We're so
well,
grateful that you joined us.
You guys,
yeah,
it's such a pleasure. Thank you so much, you guys.
Woo! So there you have it, guys. Miss Ricky Lake on Uncensored Radio. As you know, you can listen Monday through Friday. You can go to our website, myuncensoredradio.com, or you can listen on demand on Stitcher, on iTunes. Ricky Lake, oh, my gosh. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, everyone. Thanks so much to Ricky for being here. Catch you later.